Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Friday, April the 17th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, thousands of people demonstrate against a wave of anti-immigrant violence in South Africa.
What is going on is not right because we are all black. What they're doing is wrong because they're banning, they're killing children, so they're destroying everything, which is wrong.
The attacks, which have killed at least four people and displaced hundreds, prompted this reaction from President Jacob Zuma in Parliament.
No amount of frustration or anger can ever justify the attacks on foreign nationals and the looting of their shops.
We also have stories from Cameroon and Sudan. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
South African police fired rubber bullets and tear gas on Thursday to disperse a crowd of anti-immigrant protesters in a suburb in eastern Johannesburg. At least four people have been killed in a wave of anti-foreigner violence that began 2 weeks ago in Durban. The violence flared after a traditional leader said in remarks reported by local media that foreigners should leave South Africa. He has since said his comments were misinterpreted. Thousands of demonstrators marched through Durban's city centre on Thursday to protest against the violence, as Sobri Govender reports.
This was the scene in the city of Durban on Thursday when thousands of people took part in a peace march to protest against the xenophobic attacks over the past 2 weeks. The march was led by government, political, social, religious and business leaders. The demonstrators walked for about 5 kilometers from a sports stadium through the main streets and converged at the city hall. They strongly condemned the attacks on foreign nationals.
What is going on is not right because we are all black. So it doesn't matter about the language that you speak, that's different. So what they're doing is wrong because they're banning, they're killing children, so they're destroying everything, which is wrong.
It's disgusting. I mean, before we are South Africans, I think people must realize that we are Africans before we are South Africans, and we belong in one race. That is what I believe in, human race.
They must stay here illegally. They don't deserve to be killed, as we are not deserve to be killed.
Local and provincial government leaders and political, religious, social and business personalities joined the demonstrators in expressing their outrage at the attacks. Bishop Reuben Philip, who was banned and house arrested along with other black leaders during the liberation struggles, called on South Africans to live in peace and harmony with fellow Africans from other parts of the continent.
God has made us one people, one nation, one Africa, one continent. We are His children. Let us unite together today. Let us be one people. And this xenophobia, but you and I, we can defeat xenophobia.
Foreign nationals at the demonstration told me they don't feel safe anymore. Many of them want to return home to Tanzania, Malawi, Nigeria, Congo and other countries. Tanzanian Saleh Abeso runs a small business in Durban.
You see, we are not treated like brothers and sisters. People are dying. They're just killing us for nothing.
Mr. Abeso now wants to go back home.
Now we're just feeling maybe if there is our embassy will help us to go back to our country. Because I hear that the Malawi's president, he was just sent buses from their country to take their people. And I feel the same if Tanzania's embassy will do something like that in order for us to go back.
South Africans, by a vast majority, despite some elements in Durban, Johannesburg and Pietermaritzburg, are hoping that sanity will return and foreign nationals will be allowed to go about their lives without any further violence.
Sudbury Govender reporting. South African President Jacob Zuma has warned those behind the current wave of xenophobic violence to stop immediately or face the full wrath of the law. The violence has claimed at least four lives, displaced hundreds of foreign nationals, and left thousands traumatized. The violence continued to spread in different areas of the country on Thursday, despite assurances by the police that they were in control of the situation. Tuzo Kamalo reports.
Addressing Parliament on Thursday, President Zuma condemned the ongoing xenophobic attacks that have forced many foreign nationals to flee their homes and seek refuge at police stations in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng provinces.
No amount of frustration or anger can ever justify the attacks on foreign nationals and the looting of their shops. We condemn the violence in the strongest possible terms. The attacks violate all the values that South Africa embodies.
Then the president had this strong warning to those behind the attacks.
The police have been directed to work round the clock to protect both foreign nationals and citizens, and to arrest looters and those committing acts of violence.
Opposition parties in parliament also voiced their displeasure at the attacks and called on the government to swiftly bring them to an end. The Democratic Alliance Party leader in parliament, Musi Maimane, reminded the nation about the words of wisdom from the late Nelson Mandela.
In 1994, President Mandela made a commitment that never and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience oppression of one by another. Let us honor his memory by honoring that dream. Let's dare never forget. We are all human beings. We are all Africans.
However, Economic Freedom Fighters Party leader Julius Malema laid the blame squarely on President Jacob Zuma's shoulders.
Mr. President, you taught our people that everything else must be resolved through violence, and therefore you must take full responsibility for having misled our nation that peaceful resolution does not exist.
In Jimston, just outside Johannesburg, dozens of foreigners fled their homes to seek refuge at the Primrose police station. Zimbabwean national Nokwethemba Masuku expressed great frustration on the attacks.
Honestly speaking, it's not safe. As they are said that they are going place by place, you will never know when and where you will be attacked. So it's not safe. I think to stay indoors where you pay rent, it's much safer. God help us.
In Benoni, also around Johannesburg, police had to use tear gas to displace about 150 locals who had gathered to start violence against foreign nationals. Meanwhile, the attacks have received condemnation around the world, including a strong warning from the African Union Commission Chairwoman, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who has described them as unacceptable.
Tuzo Kamalo, we stay with South Africa. The xenophobic attacks in Durban were directed at shops and homes owned by Somalis, Ethiopians and Malawians and other immigrants. I asked independent political analyst Ralph Matega who was behind these lethal attacks.
It is generally the communities. These things are happening in the townships where we see this sporadic emergence. We have seen in Durban, we have seen in Johannesburg. It is the locals actually who have been at the forefront of this. It is not very clear how far more information one can get as to which locals, which maybe ethnic group from the locals are perpetuating this. It's just across, it's done by people from different ethnic groups within the country. And also there are criminal elements as well, because we know that when such kind of things happen in South Africa, as we have seen the case in 2008, when we have had such occurrence, there has been violence orchestrated as well. There are those who take advantage of this and also perpetuate some of the violent activities as these people are being confronted.
President Zuma has admitted that the government has been slow to tackle some of the issues behind the violence. Why didn't he react sooner and tackle those issues?
I think the problem is denial, because in the quarters of government, there seems to be ambivalence when it comes to how do you make sense on how do you interpret such kind of events. Earlier on, some were referred to as simple acts of criminality, and now we've got different phrases that have been brought or pushed forward to explain such phrases such as Afrophobia. And all in all, some of these points to denial, and which I think hampers government's ability to respond to that, is government accepts this kind of conduct as xenophobic conduct targeted at people, foreign nationals, then that will be a step closer towards identifying an appropriate intervention mechanism. But that has not been done. We have spent a lot of time on the semantics of this instead of coming up with real solutions.
How much damage is this violence doing to South Africa's commitment within SADC to promoting the free movement of labour?
Well, a great deal of damage. I mean, South Africa's industry, the mining sector, the service sector, depends a lot on labour provided by foreign nationals. It has been the case in the mining sector that the larger people who work there are foreign nationals. And also, South Africa being the leader on the continent as well, this undermines any kind of intervention South Africa may have regarding peace and stability in other countries on the continent. And also, being the country that is born out of the quest for human rights, such kind of an event, such kind of conduct that we've seen in South Africa, puts a dent on the history of South Africa as a country.
Ralf Matega.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
And there's more on those events in South Africa on our website, dw.de/Africa. You'll find both breaking news stories and detailed analysis. But now we move on to other topics elsewhere on the continent.
Human rights.
In Human Rights This Week, we focus on leprosy, a disease known to humanity for thousands of years. Throughout history, people afflicted with it have been ostracized, marginalized. But these days, leprosy is curable, and according to the World Health Organization, treatment provided in the early stages averts disability. And treatment has been made available by the WHO to all patients free of charge since 1995. Despite this, the powerful stigma attached to the disease is preventing people from seeking treatment, and the suffering continues. Moki Kinseka reports from a centre in Cameroon which is trying to help.
Hallelujah. 35 leprosy patients sing here at the Centre for Hope in Bingo, a locality in northwestern Cameroon. Among them is 64-year-old Tala Chrysantos, who says he prays every day to see his children before he dies.
I have two children. I hear one is working at the coast and the other in Yaoundé. I pray for them. Even today, I ask the pastor to pray for them.
65-year-old Pauline Versumin barely walks. She says she is not sure her family knows she is still alive.
When I was brought here a very long time ago, nobody could imagine that I would recover from my illness. But, as you can see, I feel relieved now. I have a little bit of strength, because any time I fall sick or I'm hungry, I am provided with what I need.
The Center for Hope was created in 1951 by Baptist missionaries when leprosy was a public health concern in Cameroon. Hundreds of patients were accused of witchcraft practices and abandoned here with damaged skin. Professor T. Pius, who manages the Baptist Church's health services in Cameroon, says the stigma has not been wiped out.
We are saying that the families should love them. They did not invite the illness. It came to them just like it can come to any of you, the family member. And when once we treat them, even if we don't have money to pay for that treatment, please come and take them back home and take care of them, and they are part of your family. And to the state, I just want to say, if there is anything to do to support them while they're in the hospital, we'll be grateful. Any little support will be appreciated.
G. Richard, administrator of the center, says even with their already bad conditions, the patients still lack access to basic needs.
They are supposed to have light, they are supposed to have televisions, they are supposed to know what is happening. You know, just to see the images, it is very encouraging. It is like they are cut off. And that's why when they go up to a hospital, they will not want to come down because they have television in their wards.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jehovah Almighty.
The patients here at Mbingo say they are informed that, like in all the other countries, those who suffer from leprosy have one main problem: stigma.
Maki Kinseka reporting. Polling stations in Sudan stayed open for an extra and final day on Thursday in elections that have been characterized by a poor turnout since they began at the start of the week. It is considered likely that President Omar al-Bashir will be able to extend his quarter of a century in power. The opposition boycotted the elections, and rights groups accused Bashir of using the security forces to stifle dissent. This report by Simona Fultin in Sudan has been adapted for Africa Link by Eunice Wanjuru.
Few voters trickled to polling stations over the first 3 days of voting in Sudan's capital, Khartoum. The poor turnout forced the government to extend voting by a day, hoping to lure more voters in an election marred by controversy. This is the country's first election since South Sudan's secession in July 2011. 16 presidential candidates and 45 political parties contested the election. State governors will no longer be elected due to a recent constitutional amendment that is widely criticized for concentrating more power in the hands of the president. Images of sleeping staff in deserted voting stations circulated on social media on the second day of voting. Candidates toured polling stations, only to find some of them empty. Local observers sat idly next to ballot boxes. Amna Omar Abdallah observed the vote for Yanabi, a local Sudanese NGO and one of the local and regional organizations that deployed observers.
I think it is low comparing with the last election, 2010. Percent of people till now, we... The three committees are 14%. This is estimating. But I think by the last of the day, this is the last day, I hope the number will increase. I hope.
In a polling station in Khartoum's Haj Yusuf area, one polling staff member, whose name is concealed, told DW that a little over 10% of registered voters had turned out in the first 3 days of voting. Staff at other polling stations across the capital gave turnout figures ranging from 10 to 20%. The government refused claims about low voter participation. Presidential adviser Ibrahim Gadnour said at a press conference on the last day of voting that they were quite satisfied with the turnout of the people.
Nobody can tell about the percentage of the turnout before the declaration of the last results by the National Election Commission. Although other party, we are following from our own stations at the different states, but I can assure you that we are quite satisfied with the turnout of the people. And those who are talking about a low turnout, they just don't know what is going on. You can see up to date the Sudanese moving to the polling stations in the different states, but I can assure you the figures you mentioned are by far very low.
Key opposition parties, including former Prime Minister Sadiq al-Mahdi's Umma Party, called on the electorate to boycott the elections, which they believe will not be free and fair. But not all voters agree with the former Prime Minister. Khatim Dafala, a 52-year-old employee, contended that those who boycott the elections are betraying their country.
If you're opposed to the government, come and compete in the elections. Maybe you win, maybe you don't win.
Mustafa Osman, an engineer from Khartoum's Riyadh area, had not yet cast his vote and had this to say.
We in Sudan want a person that is well known to all of us. Therefore, Bashir is the right person to run this country.
Ongoing fighting in the Nuba Mountains has prompted the National Election Commission to cancel elections in 7 constituencies. Voting has also been cancelled in 2 constituencies in the conflict-ridden region of Darfur. The Sudanese government accuses the EU and the Qatar Foundation, which did not send observers, for acting out of political reasons.
And that report was written by Simona Fulton.
Your say.
It's Friday, and that means it's time for Your Say, when you give us your thoughts on the stories we've been covering over the past week. And shortly before we went on the air, I was joined in the studio by Abubakar Jalou.
We begin in Guinea, where mass protests broke out earlier this week in the capital, Conakry.
The news agency AFP had reported that businesses remained closed on Wednesday in Conakry as police poured into the streets to maintain order after 48 hours of clashes between anti-government protesters and security forces. Conakry had been rocked by violence since the early hours of Monday, when hundreds of youths gathered on the main road into the city centre and hurled stones at police.
Aliyu Al-Kasim from Yobe State, northeast of Nigeria, wrote, "In my country, Nigeria, the parliamentary and governorship elections were held before the presidential elections. Outgoing President Goodluck Jonathan engineered this arrangement. Despite the alteration and postponement, he was defeated by the opposition party's candidate. So if it is possible to defeat Jonathan, I think Guinea's President Alpha Conde can be defeated by the ballot. I want to use this opportunity to call on Guinea's opposition parties to ask their supporters and the general public to restrain from the ongoing protest before the situation deteriorates."
Thank you, Al-Kasim. What else are listeners talking about, Abubakar?
We also received a really good response about our report on the anniversary of the kidnapping of the Chibok school girls.
We've been reporting on that anniversary in depth.
Adisa Maru from Osagbo in Nigeria responded to that report. He wrote, "The kidnapping of hundreds of schoolgirls in Chibok in April 2014 has remained one of the most incomprehensible events I have ever heard of. It is such a pity that all efforts are yet to bring results. I hope with the emergence of General Buhari, the dream of getting the girls back will come true. May we not witness such misfortune again." Maruf also responded to another report we aired on Africa Link about the drowning of Africans in a boat on the Mediterranean Sea.
We reported that survivors rescued from the migrant boat that capsized off the coast of Libya on Tuesday said up to 400 people travelling with them drowned in the incident.
Marek wrote that, "I was deeply sad as I heard of the deaths of hundreds of African migrants off the Italian coast. Incidents like these have become quite rampant. I am of the opinion that people who attempt to make the journey are so desperate that they resort to taking the risk of crossing overseas. If life had not been too difficult for Africans in their home countries, they wouldn't have sent themselves into an early grave." For those two important comments and for responding to our opinion question, we've chosen Marek as winner of this week's competition.
Thank you, Abubakar. And you too can win a prize on Your Say. Just listen to the question we ask in our opinion corner at the end of Wednesday's edition of Africa Link and send in your comments. You can do that in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or in a text message to country code 49 160957 59510. Your Say returns at the same time next week. Our main stories before we leave you. South African police fired rubber bullets and tear gas on Thursday to disperse anti-immigrant protesters in Johannesburg as the country's president called for a halt to a wave of violence directed at foreign nationals. Sudan extended nationwide elections by one day after a low turnout, which the opposition blames on apathy towards a vote, which President Omar al-Bashir is widely expected to win. Africa Link returns on Monday when Crispin Wakideo will be here. Do join him if you can. As always, thank you for listening. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bath.